Ms. Tucker, I believe you're representing Mr. Mabee and Ms. Grace this morning. You may begin your presentation.
Thank you very much, Presiding Officer Duchesne and members of the board. And I especially want to thank the members of the staff for their tedious Herculean effort to put the notebook together for everyone, and I appreciate that very much. I also want to extend my appreciation for moving this a week. As you all know, I've been battling the plague and the kidney stone for the last several weeks, so I really wasn't up to doing this on the night, so I very much appreciate this movement. One addition I would make to the relevant rules from Chapter 2 is also 11F, which has to do with the burden of proof in governing law. And I would note that that rule states that an applicant for a license has the burden of proof to affirmatively demonstrate to the department that each of the licensing criteria in statute or rule has been met. And it goes on to say, for those matters relating to licensing criteria that are disputed by evidence the department determines to be credible, the applicant has the burden of proving by a preponderance of the evidence that the licensing criteria are satisfied. So even though we're the movement here, the burden of proof remains with Nordic to demonstrate that the documents it submitted actually sufficiently established TRI. Now, I know this is a daunting notebook. It's almost 500 pages long, I believe. But I do want to say this. We are not asking the board to make a determination of who owns this intertidal land. That is unnecessary, and that is not what we're asking to do. We definitely believe that the record establishes that Jeffrey Mabee and Judith Grace are the true owners in fee simple of this property, but that's not something you need to resolve. We also believe that the record clearly demonstrates that the Eckroats do not have any ownership interest in the intertidal land on which their lot fronts, because the intertidal flats were severed from the upland in 1946 on January 25th when Harriet L. Hartley conveyed that land to Fred R. Bork. But again, we do not believe that you need to get to that issue in order to resolve the TRI question in front of you, and I'll explain why. In the June 13th letter that Mr. Martin drafted on TRI, it states in relevant part that with respect to the intertidal portion of the property proposed for use, the department finds that the deeds and submissions, including NAF options to purchase and easements over the Eckroats property, and the common law presumption of conveyance of the intertidal area along with an upland conveyance, constitutes sufficient showing of TRI for the department to process and take action on the pending application. This determination is not an adjudication of property rights and may be reconsidered by the department at any time during processing, as applicants must have adequate and sufficient TRI throughout the application process. Accordingly, should a court adjudicate any property disputes or rights in any way that affects NAF's interest in the proposed project lands while the applications are being processed, the department may revisit the issue of TRI. Now, that's a lot to unpack there. First of all, we do not need to get a court to say who does or doesn't own this land for this TRI issue to come back up to the board. First of all, on June 13th, when this was decided, we had submitted a judgment from the Waldo County Superior Court dated June 26, 1970, that already did determine the ownership of this land based on the identical property description in the Mabee Grace deed. But again, even though there is this prior judgment that should have been honored and respected, we have filed another quiet title action in the Waldo County Superior Court because we could not get the state agencies to recognize or honor the 1970 prior judgment. That is disturbing. It has been very costly, but again, we don't need to get to that issue. And why is that? Because at the time this application was filed, the documents on which Nordic relied in filing this were the August 6, 2018 easement purchase and sale agreement, that defines the boundaries of the easement being granted, the option for an easement granted from the Eckroats to Nordic as terminating at the high water mark of the Eckroats lot. That can be seen in the easement agreement itself at Exhibit A, which defines the boundaries as terminating at the high water mark. It is a Google Earth image with yellow lines written on it, and it terminates at the high water mark. In January of 2019, the MGL interveners, I don't think we had even intervened at that point, but Upstream Watch and the Maine Lobstering Union and other lobstermen, we objected to the filing and the reliance on this August 6th document as establishing TRI because it terminated at the high water mark. The department sent a letter dated the 26th of January agreeing and asking Nordic to provide additional evidence. On March 3rd, both to Submerged Lands and then ultimately to DEP, Nordic filed a letter agreement, they called it. And it was between Eric Heim to the Eckroats with an acknowledgement sign dated February 28th by Richard and Janet Eckroat. And in sum, that letter said, and I'm going to paraphrase here, but you can look at the document. It begins, the thread of emails with this begins at page 418 of your notebook. The March 3rd letter says, in essence, you intended to grant us a broad easement in U.S. Route 1 and the Intertidal Zone, and we have the same rights in U.S. Route 1 and the Intertidal Zone that you, the Eckroats, have, including the same rights to site or construct pipelines in that area that you, the Eckroats, have. But what that letter never said is that the Eckroats have any rights to do anything in the Intertidal Zone beyond that which every citizen of the state of Maine has under the Colonial Ordinance of 1641 to 1647, which is to fish, fowl, and navigate. And scuba dive. This is the well-known scuba diving that happened in 1641 through 1647. But they did not have a right, nor does anyone else in the state of Maine, to bury pipelines in that intertidal zone. So it never says they did. But the reason we renewed this motion, beginning on January 8th of this year, and then formalized in the February 18th filing that we submitted to the board, is because on December 24th, 2019, Nordic and the Eckroats extended the closing date and amended the August 6, 2018 easement agreement. And in that extension for the August 6, 2018 easement agreement, two things happened. One, they never amended the boundaries of the easement as defined by Exhibit A in the original document. And two, they had a whereas clause. And that whereas clause specifically stated that whereas as specified in the March 3rd, 2019 letter agreement, any easement rights seller grants with respect to the intertidal zone and U.S. Route 1 adjacent to their real property are limited to whatever ownership rights we may have in and to said areas, if any, and no representation or warranty is made as to any such ownership rights. So in other words, these parties themselves have clarified that the March 3rd letter did not make any representation or warranty that the Eckroats own anything. So let's look at the documents now in front of this board. The only documents claiming to grant Nordic the right to use the intertidal zone is an easement agreement for an option to purchase if they get all their permits that terminates at the high water mark of the Eckroats lot. A March 3rd letter that makes no representation or warranty that the Eckroats own anything in the intertidal zone. But the bottom line is the Eckroats have never given an easement to Nordic to use the intertidal zone. Period. There is not a document in front of you between the Eckroats and Nordic granting Nordic the right to have an easement over that land. Now, the Maine law is very clear. You can only grant and convey or grant an easement in land that you own. Now, we say the Eckroats don't own it. But even if they did, they've never granted Nordic an easement to it that's been submitted to this board. And therefore, there is no sufficient showing of TRI. In addition, in front of you, you've got the deeds going back to 1946 and beyond, frankly, for all these properties. And what those deeds show is that the Eckroats property ends at the high water mark. And in October 3rd of 2019, the Maine Supreme Judicial Court in the Ameter case, a case that Mr. Cowan was the prevailing counsel on behalf of the town of Kennebunkport, the court said at that time that there is no such thing as a presumption of ownership in the intertidal land in the state of Maine unless the source deed itself grants a right to the intertidal land. And where in Maine, there, because you can sever the upland and the intertidal flats, it is imperative to look at the source deeds. Here, the source deeds all terminate at the intertidal, the high water mark of Penobscot Bay. It talks about, it goes to an iron bolt at the mouth of a brook. Not the mouth of a brook, but an iron bolt at the mouth of a brook. That's an identifiable point on the face of the earth that you have in front of you on these surveys. Then it goes along the high water mark of Penobscot Bay to a stake at the outlet of a gully. Not at the outlet of a gully, some imaginary thing that may move or maybe down by the low water mark. There is a stake in the earth that was placed there in August 31st or before in 2012 by good deed surveyors who were the ones that the Eckroats commissioned to survey the land owned by Phyllis J. Corr, Janet Eckroats' mother, prior to her death. And where that stake and that pin are on the face of the earth at the mouth of the brook and the outlet of the gully can be seen on the surveys that are in front of you. If you look at the survey at page 58, you can see that Gustav Ronson of Good Deeds identifies the waterside boundary of the Eckroats lot as along high water. That's not a something we have to interpret. She wrote it in plain English words along the high water mark. And you can see the pins that are placed on the face of the earth. And they're in the upland, and there's a spot there at the mouth of the brook, and there's a spot that's there that's rebar that's put with a cap on it that's been relocated by Don Richards, our surveyor. It was also identified by another good deed surveyor, Clark Staples, on April 2nd, 2018, who also identified that the Eckroats property boundary, waterside boundary, is the high water mark of Penobscot Bay, not the low water mark. In the state of Maine, when a survey and a description in a deed differ, and the survey has been incorporated by reference into the deed, the survey controls over competing words. In 2012, we know that there was the phrase added. Instead of along high watermark of Penobscot Bay, Lee Woodward, the lawyer for the personal representative of Phyllis J. Corr's estate, changed those words from along high watermark of Penobscot Bay to along said bay, implying the low watermark. But he also said to the pin at the mouth of the brook, to the pin at the outlet of the gully. Those things are identified on the face of the earth as being above that. Whatever ambiguity was may have been created by that, it is resolved by looking at the August 31st, 2012 survey, which is at page 58 of your notebook. When you look at that document, you can see that the Eckroats surveyor established that the boundary of the Eckroats lot was along the high water mark, not low. They do not, and then to clarify, on page 57, Gusta Ronson wrote a letter to Don Richards specifically stating that they found no evidence of any ownership interest in the intertidal land by the Eprows. It specifically says, we found no deeded information or language that indicated fee title of this parcel included the intertidal zone, and by language at its creation specifically stopped at the high water. The purpose of the survey was to clarify the boundaries, as the description within the deed to Phyllis Poor contained two parcels and a line agreement which did not provide specific cohesive description on its face. There is no note saying title would extend to low water. That's their surveyor. And then again, if you look at the document at page 62, this is the survey that Nordic had done prior to even entering the easement agreement with the Eprows. And during that, the surveyor wrote the following language in all caps in the water there. There's tiny little letters there. You'll see them in all caps on page 62. I'll read what the words say. Shaded area depicts lands located below the high tide line. The deed from the estate of Phyllis J. Poor to Richard and Janet Eckroth, dated October 15, 2012, and recorded in book 3697, page 5, contains the language, quote, thence generally southwesterly along said, meaning Penobscot Bay, a distance of 425 feet. The previous deed from William O. and Phyllis J. Poor to Phyllis J. Poor, dated July 1, 1991, recorded in book 1228, page 346, contains the language, quote, thence easterly and northeasterly along high water mark of Penobscot Bay, 410 feet, close quote. I suggest a legal opinion of the ability of the estate of Phyllis J. Poor to grant an easement below the high water mark. Now, this placed Nordic on notice as early as April 2nd, 2018, from their own surveyor, and they had access to the 2012 deed, which previously said along high water was the boundary of the Eckroth lot. Nordic has at all times been on notice that the Eckroths had no ability to grant them an easement beyond that. Maine law is very clear, which was reaffirmed in the Almeter decision, that one cannot convey land that they do not own and cannot grant an easement in land they do not own. And you cannot resurrect an interest in the intertidal zone by adding words like Mr. Woodward did in 2012 in the October 15th deed. That's specifically stated in the Almeter decision by the Maine Supreme Judicial Court, stating the court correctly concluded that the beachfront owners do not benefit from the colonial ordinance presumption because their source deeds do not include a call to the water or even to the shore. The foundational deeds and incorporated plans in the other tidal chains similarly destroy any presumption that the beachfront owners owned the low water mark. In most of the tidal chains, language referencing the water was added in later deeds. These late additions do not resurrect the presumption of ownership to the low water mark, citing Eaton, 2000 Maine, 176 at paragraph 19, noting that a person can convey only what is conveyed into them. So, although we say that the record before you shows that the Eckroth deeds do not include the intertidal land, more importantly, even if they owned that, the record before you shows that they've never granted an easement to Nordic below the high water mark. Now, perhaps that's because the same lawyer, Lee Woodward, wrote the October 2012 deed, where even though he added the Hinkley words, he knew it ended at the high water mark because he's the same lawyer that represented the Eckroths in writing the March 3rd letter, in doing the 12-24-2019 amendment, and in doing the 2018 easement agreement, which ends at the high water mark because he knows they don't own beyond that. So I'm saying the record before you already establishes that there is nothing in this record to show any title right or interest in the intertidal zone by Nordic, let alone sufficient. In addition, and finally, we have given two documents to you that are prior court judgments. One, I've already referenced, which is the decision in Ferris versus Hargrave, where the court quieted title using the identical deed description that's in the Maybe Grace deed in Winston Ferris. And if you look at the seven sketches from Don Richards that are in your package, those seven sketches also contain, and I'm going to look at the page numbers for you. I'm sorry, let me look at the page number so I can... This is fairly far back in the document here. I believe it starts at page 193, 195. No, those are the redacted deeds. I'm sorry.
Excuse me, this is Cindy Bertacci speaking.
Yes.
Sketches begin on page 238 of the packet.
Great, thank you very much. If you look at those sketches, especially sketches 5, 6, and 7, you'll see what was conveyed out by Harriet Hartley. You have a document in the record here from at page 145, which is the letter from Jim Dorsky to Eric Kime. It begins at page 145, and at page 145 and 146, Jim Dorsky, who's also a surveyor retained by Nordic, expressly states and agrees that there was a severance of the upland from the intertidal flats. But he goes on to say that his belief is that in September of 1950, when Harriet Hartley conveyed the remainder of her land to the Butlers, that she somehow, by using the description, the abutters description of north by land of Fred R. Poor, east by Penobscot Bay, south by Little River, west by Atlantic Highway, so-called, that abutters description drew an imaginary line between what is now called lots 37 and 36, and that the intertidal land in front of lots 36 and most of 35, the old Fred R. Poor waterfront boundary, was somehow retained by Harriet Hartley. Now, that's a nice theory, but it's not supported by law, because at the time of Harriet Hartley's death in 1951, the Orphans Court in Philadelphia, through the Philadelphia Register of Wills, made a determination that at the time of her death on October 18th, 1951, Harriet had already, during life, more than 12 months before, conveyed all of her land covered by her 1945 will, which is the land up in Maine, and that at the time of her death, she owned no real property. And as a result, it rendered her will conveying that land, and whatever of that land she continued to retain, it rendered it ineffective. And the two people she had named as her heirs, her nephew, Samuel Nelson Woods Jr., and her sister-in-law, Ruth Hartley Weaver, got nothing from her will conveying any land, because there was no land to convey according to the Orphans Court. And as a consequence, no appeal was ever filed by the heirs that got nothing. And instead, the heirs at law were then designated her two sisters, Genevieve Hargrave Bailey and Esther Hargrave Wood. They were the two people that were her heirs at law, and they got no property. And so again, going back to the Almeter decision and all the other prior decisions in the state of Maine, you cannot convey that which you do not own. I do not know, because we have not been able to get the information, who the supposed release deeds were that were filed June 10th with the department are. I have no idea who those people are. But what I can tell you is this. They are not heirs at law of Harriet L. Hartley. They may be some blood relative coming from Samuel Woods' two children, one of whom had two children. I have no idea. But I know what they aren't, and that's heirs at law under Pennsylvania law at the time of Harriet's death. Because at the time of Harriet's death, there were two heirs at law that were designated, her two sisters. Both of them died. Esther died on May 1st, 1957, and Genevieve died on April 19, 1956. So neither one of them in 2019 signed whatever these release deeds were. The release deeds also convey whatever interest they may or may not have had based on the deed of Genevieve Hargrave to Arthur and Harriet L. Hartley, dated August 27, 1934. That deed is exactly the deed that in the 1970 Ferris versus Hargrave decision, the Waldo County Superior Court extinguished the right and barred anyone claiming under Genevieve Hargrave and that deed from ever asserting title, right, interest, or estate in the land described in the judgment, which is the identical land described in my client's deed and described in that judgment. And so, again, I don't know who those people are that Nordic has cooked up these, quote, release deeds from, but they can convey no title to land. They certainly do not convey title to this intertidal land, and they certainly do not convey any title, interest, or estate in this land that is legal because a prior court judgment extinguished that in 1970, and that is in the chain of title in the Waldo County Superior Court, which clearly this applicant knows. So that's the conclusion of what my reference is to. If you have any questions, please let me know.
Yes, this is the time.